Thank you. Okay, now we are going to go on to the next case of the day, which is number 093640, Katwika versus Rose Packing Company. And Mr. Gorman. Still morning. Good morning, Mr. Gorman.
Good morning. I'm Greg Gorman, and I'm representing the plaintiff, Teresa Katwitza. May the court please. As you know, this is an ADA case. To establish a prima facie case for failure to accommodate under the ADA, plaintiff must establish one of three things, and only one is necessary. The ADA defines disability as a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits one or more of the major life activities of the individual. Both the district court and defense in their briefs have addressed this issue somewhat detail. I don't understand why, because the plaintiff has conceded from the beginning that she does not have a physical or mental impairment substantially limiting her in any major life activity. In fact, her hip replacement surgery was a great success, and she was ready to return back to work in better health and better able to do her job than before the surgery. So we concede that Ms. Katwitza does not meet the first prong. The second prong, we do believe she's met, and that is having a record of such impairment. The EEOC defines having a record of the impairment as one has a history of or has been misclassified as having a mental or physical impairment that substantially limits one or more life activities. Ms. Katwitza does have such a history. The year before her surgery, she had to take off in December 2005 for her hip-related problems. She was at that time doing office work at Rose, and they gave her leave time this year before. They also required her, pursuant to this policy that they have, to bring a note from her doctor to return to the clerical position saying that she had no restrictions on her work, and she did that. Then in December of 2005, she had her hip replacement surgery, and she was off for 6 weeks. She took her FMLA leave and all of her vacation leave. The company was aware of all this, of course. They approved it. Again, they told her she had to come back without restrictions. This time she wasn't able to. But this is a sufficient history to show that she had a record of impairment and that Rose knew well about it.
But temporary inabilities to work are not usually sufficient to meet the standard, are they?
Well, she was disabled from the major life activity of work for a period of time, and it is our argument that Rose treats people like that as if they are disabled. And that's the third prong.
You're fitting around to the regarded as prong, is it?
The record, two prongs. We think she meets two of the prongs. She has the record of the impairment, which is the second prong.
I can't see the record part of it.
Well, she was unable to work.
I think you may have an argument on regarded.
Well, that's the third prong, and we believe we have that argument also. They do regard her as having an impairment. Now, it's this oddball policy that they have.
But doesn't that require being thought of as not being able to perform a broad range of jobs? And didn't
exactly.
They think she could have performed, they said she could have performed some jobs, and they just didn't have people there. Right?
Well, the company nurse said that. I don't know what probative value the company nurse opinion would have, but there was a broad range of jobs that they determined she was not able to perform. The test is not that you're not able to perform any job. The test is, are you unable to perform a broad range of jobs? They say she couldn't do work in the curing department, processing department, slicing, cooking, which she testified
Forgive me, I don't mean to interrupt, but is there any dispute that Rose Packing does in fact rotate its general laborers through various assignments and expects each general laborer to be able to meet the demands of every assignment, including ones that require lifting?
Yes, that is agreed by all parties. Ms. Kotwitz's testimony at her deposition was that she could have continued rotating at her job just as she always had, and that her job...
I thought there was... Well, is there any dispute that some of these general labor positions require more lifting than her doctor would allow her to engage in?
The testimony from her was she never, in all the time she worked for Rose, was required to lift over 25 pounds. She was rotating.
But that was the job requirement, wasn't it? That she couldn't be a general laborer unless she could do 50 pounds, right?
No. Well,
I mean, that was the company's position. Wasn't that the company's position?
That's not the reason they terminated her. They terminated her because she had restrictions. The testimony was that the restriction said you can't lift over 1,000 pounds.
But you have to show now that she's disabled under the regarded as prong. That's what we're talking about, right?
That she's regarded as disabled. She's not disabled. The company regarded her as disabled. But she was still able to do her job. They regarded her as disabled from doing any
job.
What's
the broad class of jobs that she couldn't perform or that they thought that she couldn't perform? Where do you get that? I don't see.
I don't think any job has been identified that she can't perform. She testifies.
Well, it's your burden to show that there's a broad class of jobs or a range of jobs that she couldn't or that they thought she couldn't perform. And I don't know, you haven't shown that she can't perform packing jobs or general labor jobs. You haven't shown that those are a class of jobs, have you?
No, but what we've shown is this is a class of jobs that Rose thought she couldn't perform incorrectly. They regarded her as unable to perform.
What class?
There was curing, processing, slicing, cooking, warehouse work. For example, cooking, all it involves is manning the dials and making sure things are at the right temperature. Washing.
Well, did these involve the things that her doctor excluded her from?
No. Under her doctor?
How'd they determine that these departments she couldn't perform?
Well, they determined she can't do any work at that company. She couldn't even do clerical work under their policy. They didn't give any individual consideration to specific jobs. They said, you've got restrictions, you're out of here. Goodbye. So they have a broad range of jobs at Rose, which include clerical work and laboratory work and all this general labor work. She could have performed any of them. She had, for example, the job that she had prior to her surgery was called palletizing. She testified she could have gone back to that job. It never required her to lift over 25 pounds. But Rose says, you have a restriction. You can't work here. It didn't matter if the restriction was 25 pounds, 50 pounds, 1,000 pounds. If you have a restriction, you're disabled from working at any of the broad range of jobs at Rose. A person regarded as having a disability by their company is entitled to all the same protections as an individual who actually does. Rose has a policy which says, we don't care what your restriction is. You can't do any jobs at our company. And it is a broad range of jobs that they have available. And she testified that she could have done any of them, that she never in all the time that she worked there had to lift over 25 pounds. The heaviest things that she had were hams, half hams, which were 25 pounds. And it was...
Well, it seems to me there may be problem with the statute here, but I'm not sure that she fits what's required under the statute.
Well, in what way? I don't know.
Well, I mean, the spirit of the statute seems not to be covered with these particular circumstances. That's just my impression.
Well, the spirit of the statute, as I see it, is to protect people who employers think are disabled.
But doesn't she have to show that she's qualified for the general laborer position, even aside from this return-to-work policy with medical restrictions, even assuming that that's no good, even assuming that that return-to-work policy is no good, doesn't she still have to show, in order to show that disability, doesn't she have to show that she's qualified for this or that she's able to do this general labor position, and she can't do it because some of those jobs require heavy lifting, and she can't be a heavy lifter?
Well, the first part of your hypothesis there, she has shown. She's shown that she's qualified to do these jobs. She's also shown that she never was required to lift 50 pounds, that that's not part of any of these jobs.
So you're saying that they're sort of fudging on what the requirements are, that it's really not a requirement, lifting?
They're saying that's only a requirement for returning to work. It has nothing to do with the actualities of the job that she performs.
But they say it's a requirement for general labor, right? And you're saying that that's not right?
I'm saying that that's not why she was fired. She was fired because she had a restriction. The decision maker didn't even know what her requirements were.
But still, doesn't she have to show she's disabled? And doesn't that interfere with her showing that she's disabled?
No, she's not disabled. She's not attempting to show that she's disabled. She's showing that the company regarded her as disabled.
But if she can't lift 25 pounds, whether you call it regarded as or disabled, doesn't her burden of proof fail under any of the prongs because she can't lift more than 25 pounds?
No, because she could perform her job lifting up to 25 pounds. So it's a made-up thing when Rose says she has to lift 50 pounds. She didn't have to lift 50 pounds. It was not part of any of her job. I see I run my red light.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dugan.
Good morning, Your Honors. Bill Dugan on behalf of Appley Rose Packing Company.
Can I just start you out? Am I correct in my understanding that even people handling clerical responsibilities or production support are characterized as general laborers and have to be prepared to rotate into positions that require the ability to lift however many pounds?
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, that's what the record shows. Rose Packing has the position which the appellant was in of a general laborer. And general laborers rotate throughout the plant, whether it would be in slicing, whether it would be in packing, whether it would be clerical work, and are expected to do so. And
I have a little experience with meat packing plants.
The largest in the world, as it happens.
Surprising that butchers have to rotate through the office. Is that what happens at Rose?
Well, the butcher classification is not a general laborer classification. That is different, and that's in the record as well. I mean, butcher to be a butcher is a specialization.
General laborers can.
Yeah, a butcher, Your Honor, is a general.
A lot of them can't speak English to start with.
A butcher position is a specialized position, and that is not a general laborer position, which was the appellant's position here. And it's undisputed that the collective bargaining agreement required and the appellant admitted that they must rotate through these positions to avoid repetitive injury. But backing up to the threshold question in the case of whether she's...
But do they actually rotate through the office? That's my question.
Yes, and that
general labor.
Right, and that is borne out through the appellant's work history as laid out in the district court record as well as the appellate court record.
All the general laborers of Rose Packing are English speaking?
Some are, some are not. Some speak Spanish, some speak Polish, some speak English like every other packing house. But again, the threshold question is what is raised before the court, which she has not demonstrated, and the district court recognized that she's not a qualified person with a disability. And simply put, she's not covered by the statute. She doesn't have a record of a disability. The only thing prior to her termination was at the end of January 2005. She was out for 1 week for some hip-related procedures, came back with no restrictions. That's obviously not a record of a substantial impairment limiting a major life activity. And then she goes out in December of 2005 for hip replacement surgery. She's out for approximately 12 to 15 weeks. During that time, she's actually working, which is undisputed in the record. She's working for the union as an interpreter. Clearly, she didn't have an impairment that substantially limited major life activity during her time away. And that obviously comes up to the time where she attempted to return to Rose Packing. And to reiterate some of the discussion this morning before the court, as far as her Rose Packing perceiving that she had a disability, the only thing, and it's undisputed and we've never contested this, Rose Packing 100% believed that she could not perform the duties of a general laborer within Rose Packing's facility by Midway Airport, given her undisputed restrictions. But the undisputed record also shows that there's no evidence that they didn't believe, or they believed that she couldn't perform a broad class of jobs. In fact, they knew she was working for the union while she was out on leave as an interpreter. In fact, discussion was even had with her the time of her termination by Linda Madliner about her being able to do other things with her computer proficiency, being bilingual, that she could go out and pursue other opportunities after she left Rose. And so we don't think that she obviously clears the first hurdle about being covered by the Act, but even if she somehow does clear that hurdle, the appellant failed to present any record evidence of any open positions at Rose that she could have performed, assuming that she does have a actual disability and is covered by the Act. And that is, again, her burden. There's no record evidence. She didn't put any in at the district court level, and obviously none at the appellate court level. And in fact, the evidence is to the opposite, that there were no open positions that she could perform with those restrictions, and that was by Bill Tobias, who was a human resources manager at the time. He did testify that there were supervisor-type positions that did not require lifting that she could possibly do, but that there were no open positions and that Rose would essentially have to bump or fire someone in a supervisor position in order to put the appellant in that position. And obviously the law does not require Rose to bump another employee or fire another employee to accommodate.
Well, who took her job while she was out having the surgery?
At the time, Rose Packing employs approximately 600 general laborers. There was no record evidence developed of the actual person that performed her duties while she was out on surgery. The business is very fluctuates depending on the time of year and what product, and so it goes up and down as far as the amount of general laborers that are needed at any one time. But the uncontested evidence...
You don't know what positions are open then, do you?
Well, the uncontested evidence was at the time of her termination, Bill Tobias, and it is uncontested, testified that there were no open positions at the time of her...
What does that mean? If you say she went off and had surgery and you didn't replace her with anybody else, and then she came back. And once she came back, there wasn't any open position. Somehow or other, something has disappeared in the interim, it seems to me.
Well, the only evidence is what the human resources manager testified to at the time of her termination, and the appellant did not develop any facts to show that his testimony was untrue or not credible in any manner. And that's all I have, unless there's some questions about the panel.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Jenkins.
Thank you.
You used up all your time. If you wish, I will give you a minute.
Sure.
I'd like to address what counsel just said about no open positions. Her job was being held open for her. If she had come back with no restrictions, she would have got that job. That job was palletizing. She was able to do that job before she had her surgery. It did not require lifting over 25 pounds, and she was ready to go back to that. It's the policy that prevented her. I have made the argument in the lower court and again in the brief that policy is itself a violation of the ADA because it precludes anybody with any restrictions from working a broad range of jobs at that company. The other thing I would like to say, Judge Cuddy, if I understood your question to counsel correctly, you were asking if general laborers rotate through the office jobs. There's no evidence of that in the record. It seems highly unlikely that people off the floor are going to come in and do the kind of clerical work that Ms. Cutwitzel was capable of doing.
It'd be an unusual packing house if that happened.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Gorman, and thank you, Mr. Dugan. The case will be taken under advisement.